been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Pro games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're going to get you set for the NHL trade deadline. That's coming up 3 days from now, Wednesday, March the 1st. Get ready for that. We'll get you set. We're going to go division by division, team by team, discussing who's a buyer, who's a seller. We'll recap the trades that have gone down already. Also today, we're going to be spending a ton of time on the Winnipeg Jets, as we always do. The Jets, 19 games left in the season. They're in the midst of their bye week. We'll look at their remaining schedule. We'll look where the standings are. We'll discuss the Jets' possibilities of making a unexpected run and becoming a playoff team. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Alongside Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Gentlemen, good morning. Good to see you both on this Saturday, the 25th of February.
Yeah, what's going on, boys?
Living the dream, living the dream. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing well. Can't complain.
There you go. That's what I like to hear. Let's get right into it with the Winnipeg Jets, previewing the final 19 games of the season. And, of course, we're in the course of the season now where there's a lot of scoreboard watching, and it was not a good night on the scoreboard the last couple nights as the Calgary Flames went into Florida. And much like the Winnipeg Jets did back in January, they completed the sweep of Tampa Bay and the sweep of the Florida Panthers, winning last night by a 4-2 margin over the Panthers. And the Calgary Flames, the team the Jets had been chasing, have used those games in hand very wisely. They are now 6 points up on the Winnipeg Jets. They still have one game in hand. In fact, the Flames have now leapfrogged the Nashville Predators into the first wildcard spot. The Predators, still themselves with 3 games in hand on the Winnipeg Jets, have a 5-point lead on the Jets, and they're in the second wildcard spot. So the Jets needed a lot to break right for them over the course of this bye week, when we knew a lot of these teams were going to play catch-up. And it hasn't worked out to their advantage so far, with the Calgary Flames playing some very good hockey. The LA Kings lost on Thursday night. They play against Anaheim tonight. So the Kings are still ahead of, or tied with the Jets with 3 games in hand as well.
Yeah, Drew, so Jets fans are going to be hoping for the Anaheim Ducks tonight when they play the LA Kings. But as you mentioned, the Flames have won 3 games in a row now, and the Jets are 6 points behind the Flames. So it's pretty impressive what the Flames did, because the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning have been playing very well. And, you know, you thought Tampa Bay might be out of it and they'd be sellers at the trade deadline, but you know, they're right in the thick of the playoff race, and the Florida Panthers have won 7 of their last 10 games. So, you know, impressive what the Flames have done. But when you've played more games than most of the other teams in the West heading into your bye week, that's what happens, right? So, I mean, the Jets are still in it. And even though their chances, as we've talked about the last couple weeks, I mean, they're not great. But that road trip really kept you in the discussion, right? So you pick up 6 of a possible 8 points. And you're on your bye week, and everybody gets to rest, and you're probably going to get some healthy bodies back, right? Drew Stafford's one of those guys that had an illness. He'll be back.
If he doesn't get traded between now and then, which we'll talk about during the trade deadline segment.
But you're probably going to get Drew Stafford back, and you know, you don't know about Andrew Kopp, because Andrew Kopp is out indefinitely. But needless to say, you know, these guys get to rest. They've played a lot of hockey here with this compressed schedule, but you know, it's not going to be easy. And you know, these teams like Calgary, they're trying to get back into the playoffs. The LA Kings, you know, they're going to get Jonathan Quick back eventually, but they're basically just treading water right now, Drew. So, you know, you got to hope that some of these other teams are able to help you out and, you know, reduce the amount of points that they pick up. But, you know, as far as, you know, Calgary, St. Louis, Nashville goes, I mean, you look at the standings, really the team that you're probably have the best chance of catching right now is the Kings.
Yeah, but the Kings, of course, the problem with that is they're not in playoff spots. So if the Kings continue to struggle, it doesn't really make a big difference for the Winnipeg Jets. The problem is the Predators and the Flames. You know, the Predators, you know, they're playing okay hockey, 5-4-1 in their last 10. It's the Flames who are on this hot streak, 7-2-1 in their last 10.
And Calgary's played 62 games. So really, yeah. I think the teams you have to leapfrog are LA and Calgary. As you said, you're right. I mean, LA's not in a playoff spot right now, but with St. Louis and Nashville still having three games in hand on the Jets and the way they've been playing, right? St. Louis has won 7 of their last 10. I don't think you're catching St. Louis. So I think it's Calgary and LA, and because Calgary's in the playoff spot and LA isn't, it's really the Flames that you have to hope cool down a little bit.
Because they have the only one game in hand as opposed to the Predators, who still have the three games in hand, is what you're saying. Dave, with 19 games left, obviously it's a long shot for the Winnipeg Jets to be able to make the playoffs. If you look at our friends at Sports Club Stats and they do the number crunching for us, they say that if the Jets pull off a 13-5-1 record over their last 19 games, they would have a 60% chance of making the playoffs. So the odds would be, you know, they'd have 60% probability of making the playoffs. Do you foresee this team having a 13-5-1 run in them over the last 19 games?
You know, I mean, it's hard to say. We'll see how they are able to keep their pre-bye week, you know, momentum going. And if they can keep that going, then there's always a chance. You never know what a team can do. But this is a team that's shown that it's had difficulty putting together a number of wins. And that's just the reality. I mean, it's not, you can't win two, lose one or two. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to, as you just said, Drew, you have to go 13-5-1 just to give yourself a 60% shot. So, I mean, that's, you know, 3-4 games in a row, you know. So, I mean, can they do it? Is it possible? I mean, the truth is, this team having 5 days off and being healthy, and, you know, all we've talked about, how teams coming off the bye week have had such poor results. The only advantage for the Jets is the Minnesota Wild, who are obviously, you know, a very good team, number one team, are also coming off their bye week. So they'll, you know, in that theory, they'll still have that sort of same rust as the Jets. So that first period on Tuesday may be a little choppy.
And the Wild also play Monday.
Yeah, the Wild play the Kings.
Oh, that's right.
The Kings on Monday, I believe. Right. So it's a back-to-back situation for the Wild, which it obviously isn't for the Jets. So it's how does the Jets' rust counteract the Wild in their back-to-back? So interesting scheduling.
You know, Dave, Drew mentioned, you know, winning 13 of 19 games. So that's almost 70%. I believe it's 68%, right? So I did that with my calculator, Drew. I didn't do that in my head. So the good news for the Jets is the next 6 games are at home, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Minnesota is a top team in the Western Conference. So that's not going to be an easy game, but maybe, you know, you catch them a little bit tired, second game of a back-to-back. But then you've got St. Louis and Colorado next weekend back-to-back. And the Jets have had a little bit of difficulty with the Avalanche, and they've done very well against the Blues. Then you've got San Jose, Pittsburgh, and Calgary. So you're talking about, with the exception of Colorado, you have 5 games against playoff teams, right?
Well, in the next 6, yeah.
Yes.
And if you look at the entire...
So it's not easy.
No, if you look at all the 19 games they have left, 13 of those 19 are against playoff teams.
Sure.
So you're right.
Well, and the Jets have actually done better against the elite teams. I mean, you look at how they played against Pittsburgh, look how they've played against Chicago and other teams. And so you look at the schedule and you say, okay, well, it's not easy, but it's doable. I mean, the Jets can win 70% of their games. And again, I mean, you look at, you know, they've got points in 5 of their last games. 3-0-2, and you know you—that's all you can do right now. I mean, you're sure you're watching the scoreboard and you're hoping that, you know, teams like LA and Calgary aren't winning. We've already seen that the Flames have won their last 3 games in a row. But I mean, you're at home. You have to go on a run. I would say that you'd probably have to win 5 of these 6 games.
Well, I think that, I mean, if you look, crunch the numbers, I think the Jets have probably a margin of error of, let's say, 5 regulation losses in the last 19 games. And anything more than that, and even that's not a guarantee you're
going to
get in.
So, Drew, if you lose 3 of these games,
you're done.
You're done. You can't go 500 on this homestand.
You have 5 in your last 19 games of the season. You can pretty much allow yourself 5 regulation losses. And even then, you're asking for trouble to think that, you know, 14-5 isn't a guarantee you're going to get in.
I think if you're the Jets, you probably had Calgary targeted as this team that was potentially vulnerable in that second wild card spot, and that was the team that you thought you could potentially leapfrog. Calgary going on this run can only obviously kill you those chances, because now, like you guys talked about, Nashville has games in hand, so does St. Louis.
Yeah.
So I'm not again.
So does Los Angeles, even though they're not a playoff team.
Exactly.
Yet.
So I mean. The key factor to me is health. I mean, you know, the Jets are banged up. There's no question about it. You look at some of these players. Blake Wheeler, probably more than anyone, I think, needed this break, needed these 5 days off to just rest his body and potentially.
Yeah, buff too.
Yeah, and I don't, I mean, again, 5 days isn't a summer. You're not going to be 100% healthy after 5 days off. But I simply think that being able to get away from the game and not have to think about it, not have to, like, I mean, maybe they're scoreboard watching, maybe they're not. They, you know, they can only control their own, what they can control, so they can't really impact what's happening elsewhere. But it does lead you to think, like, it's funny how we're almost in March, and I remember in November, October, when they were losing these games against teams that they really couldn't afford to lose games against, mm-hmm. and I was thinking, and we talked about it back then, if for those shows, how those are the games that you talk about in February and March that you couldn't afford to be losing.
Absolutely.
And it feels like, you know, Matthew Perreault, who's a fairly outspoken guy, has been saying for probably 2 months now, like, this is a must-win game, this is a must-win game. And now a lot of those must-wins they've lost, but the reality is that now they're in a situation where every game pretty much is now a must win. If you want to have, I mean, the problem is, and it's unfortunate for this team based on the way they've, but this team has done it. Nobody else has like done this to them. They've done this to themselves. They've put themselves into this position. So the reality is that you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, you guys have to go out and win. And if you can do that, that's all you can control. So if you can win those games, but the problem is you don't get, as you guys have just illustrated, you don't guarantee yourself anything. You guarantee you could finish ninth, right? As
sure.
opposed to, because Calgary's hot right now. You know, LA was okay. Well,
Jonathan Quick should be back within the next week or 2 weeks, and all of a sudden LA's going to.
Again, I don't even think LA's a factor. I think Calgary is the team that you, like, I don't think Nashville's going to cool off. I don't think St. Louis is going to cool off.
So you're saying that it's, that Calgary is the target for the Winnipeg Jets simply because they only have one game in hand on the Jets at this point in time.
And I don't think Calgary's as good of a team as Nashville or St. Louis. I think Dave would agree with that, and look, guys, we said it 5 minutes ago. I mean, the Jets have to win most likely 70% of their games to give themselves a good chance of getting in. So are the Jets at this stage right now, Saturday, February 25th,
mm-hmm.
are they out of it? No, they're not out of it. But unless they go on a crazy run, so that's, you know, winning 5 of 6, 7 of 8, you know, 6 of 8.
No, well, I mean, 15 of 19. That's
right.
What it has to be. I mean, you know.
But I'm just looking more so in the short term.
Yeah, you're looking at the short term. You're looking at this 6-game homestand that starts Tuesday against the Wild, and you're saying you need to win, you know, 4-1-1, 5-0-1. I mean, the margin of error is negligible. It's gone. You've used up any margin of error when you lost in Vancouver in December.
Right, so that game against Minnesota is huge because each loss makes it that much more difficult to get in, right? Because you can mm-hmm. only really afford to lose, like we said, 5 or so games.
Yeah.
So, again, there's some hope out there for Jets fans. You know, there's a reason, to watch these games in addition to the fact that, you know, you have two of the top lines in the league right now scoring with, both the Mark Scheifele and Brian Little lines. But, I mean, it's going to be hard, but, you know, we've seen crazier things in the NHL.
Yeah, I guess we have. I mean, they went on a similar run to make the playoffs a few years ago where they had to go, you know, they had to win, you know, they had to go on that road trip where they put up all the shutouts at the end of the season just to get in.
Yeah, Tampa, and I think they beat Tampa. Was that the one where they beat Tampa?
No, I think it was they went into St. Louis and they beat St. Louis, and they went into Minnesota and they beat Minnesota, and then they went into Colorado and they lost in that shootout.
Yeah, yeah.
That was when Pavlik had that hot streak to make the playoffs
right.
3 years ago. So you're right, Ezzie, in that it's not unprecedented for a team to go on this kind of run. I would say it's very unlikely given what we've seen from this Winnipeg Jets team throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I mean, it's going to be really difficult, again, for this team to get in. But that's why you play the games. And these guys.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Well, no, but it's true, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, these guys are professional athletes. They have pride. They're going to be fighting down to the last whistle.
It'll be interesting, and it all starts on Tuesday when the Wild meet the Winnipeg Jets here in Winnipeg as the Jets come off of their bye week. When we come back, we're discussing the Winnipeg Jets' identity Has it changed over the course of this past four-game road trip? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
He straddles the line, tightropes it in back, now moves in, Malkin to the forehand, to the backhand, back on in front for Hornquist, a shot, he hit the post, and the Jets will send the puck all the way down the ice. One of the Jets is upset and hurt in front of his own net, that's Wheeler, and now everybody trying to chase down the principal in that for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Stone on the near side for Carlson moving in. Carlson shoots, deflected to the side of the net. Penalty coming up here to Winnipeg as Stone was upset in front of the Winnipeg net. He is down, hurt, and rolls on his back now. And Winnipeg will be summoned to the penalty box in the form of Jacob Trouba.
Two hits from the previous Jets road trip. Malkin on Wheeler. Trouba on Stone. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So on that road trip, the one that just concluded before the bye week, the Winnipeg Jets definitely played a more physical style than we had been used to seeing from them this season.
Yeah, especially against Pittsburgh and Toronto.
Toronto. They were more physical games. I take you to Elliot Friedman's 30 Thoughts column from this week. Winnipeg players and undoubtedly the organization were upset Jacob Trouba was suspended 2 games for his hit on Mark Stone after Pittsburgh's Evgeny Malkin got nothing for his hit on Wheeler. Now, this is the interesting part. The Jets are an interesting group in the sense they are tough. A throwback team. Opponents know they're going to get bruised when they play Winnipeg. After listening to the Jets' comments Tuesday morning in Toronto, I spent a chunk of the afternoon rewatching the Pittsburgh game. Two Pittsburgh defenders went down that night. I wonder if the Penguins just got frustrated, leading to a bit of old-school frontier justice. Evgeny Malkin has a real edge to him. It's probably a bigger column and conversation, but one of the problems all sports face now is that we like tough, intense competition, but can't handle the consequences. This is another interesting part. That was a great game, the game against Pittsburgh, and the intensity boiled over. Not everyone can handle Winnipeg's nastiness. Is there anybody in this room, having watched the Jets for 63 games this season? Does anybody in this room think that the Jets were a nasty team prior to that game in Pittsburgh?
Well, it depends what you mean by nasty. I mean,
tough, physical?
Nasty. Yeah. I mean, and the really? Thing is, the Jets are a physical team, and I think it's been overstated how the Jets are a less physical team since a couple of years ago. You look at the hits leaders, and 8, 9, 10 is Pittsburgh-Toronto Jets. So the Jets are 10th in the NHL in hits. And again, you could say, well, you know, some of that has to do with the fact that for stretches of games, the Jets don't have the puck. Chris Thorburn is tied for 4th in the NHL in fighting majors. He's really the only guy on the team that fights. We've seen Ben Chiarot fight in recent weeks. But so you look at those stats and you say, okay, well, the Jets hit a lot, top third of the league. They have a guy that fights quite a bit. They're a pretty tough team. Now, I wouldn't say that the Jets are the most physical team in the entire league, but you know, you look at a couple of years ago when the Jets made the playoffs and they traded Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian to Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And then so you lost some of that physicality, right?
You lost a lot of that physicality.
But what has remained constant? Dustin Byfuglien, sure. Adam Lowry,
sure.
A guy like Mark Stewart is back in the lineup. He's a physical player. I mean, Ben Chiarot's a physical player. A guy like Brandon Tanev, you know, small, but he throws his weight around. I mean, even Matthew Perreault's been throwing his weight around lately. So, again, I'm not saying that this is, you know, the Broad Street Bullies, Drew, but you know, I go into the visiting dressing room after every game in the MTS Center. Dave goes into the Jets room, and a lot of players and a lot of coaches give the Jets a lot of credit. The Jets are one of the tallest and heaviest teams in the league. James Myrtle did that breakdown.
Yeah, he does it every offseason.
So you can look at, you know, the Jets are up there as far as height and weight go. So, I mean, this is not, I mean, again, you know, you have players like even Patrick Laine, I think, you know, over the last month or so has been throwing his weight around. He's 6'4", 200 plus pounds, and he's only getting bigger. Obviously, he's not a power forward, Drew, but just saying, I mean, over the last year with the emergence of Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers, You know, Mark Scheifele, obviously his breakout year was last year, but the Jets have kind of got this reputation for being more of a skilled team, and they're absolutely a skilled team. But they also have guys that can get in on the forecheck and lay the body. So I do think that this is a physical team, and I do think it should be more part of their identity, because if you go back to the 2014-15 season, that was a big part of their identity, you know, hitting everything that moved, whether that was a guy like Buff or Adam Lowry on the third line. So,
right. I agree with you there, Ezzy, that when they made the playoffs in that season, they were a more physical team. They lost a little bit of that edge, you know, when they traded Kane and Bogosian. But, you know, having watched the Jets all this year, Dave, I just don't see them, as Elliot describes them, as this big, nasty, physical team. I respect Elliot completely, but I also know that the Jets probably aren't the first team that he watches on a night-in, night-out basis in the course of his duties. So I don't see this reputation of the Jets being this nasty, mean team as being altogether true.
Well, Drew, the truth is, when you listen to a lot of things that people say about the Jets, you wonder what team they're talking about, because sometimes you're sitting there and you're thinking, well, I've watched every game these guys have played, either on the road or in person, and that doesn't make you the foremost expert, but at least you can say, well, with some degree of certainty, that you have a general idea as to who this team is. I would suggest that this is more of a rediscovered talent than something that we've been seeing all year long. Personally, that's my feeling. And I think, you know, you cannot diminish what Evander Kane or a Zach Bogosian or even an Andrew Ladd, that type of physicality. When you lose that, you know, and don't get me wrong, Nikolaj Ehlers, great player, Patrick Laine, and he's a physical. For a skilled guy, he is actually pretty physical, likes to take the body. But, I mean, I don't think we've been seeing that. Nick Patan, you know, I personally think we're seeing that now. And I think, to be honest with you, they're probably being led by Matthew Perreault. I think Matthew Perreault is an inspiration. When a guy who's 5'10", throws his body around, not recklessly, but controlled and through purpose, as if he's 6'5". Like, he's using he does the things that you need to do, and he knocked a player out in Ottawa with an open ice check. I mean, Matthew Perreault is playing what the Jets are talking, what Elliot describes as, you know, that physical brand of hockey. And, you know, you've got guys, and we've talked about how guys have been injured. You know, you've got Sean Matthias who should be playing that physical style. Adam Lowry, to me, doesn't use his body enough. Like, I think Adam Lowry is a big, like, he's a big 6'5". Mm-hmm. He is a big presence. And sometimes you wonder why he doesn't use his physicality a little bit more.
14th in the NHL in hits this year, in his defense.
Yeah.
But you're right. I never thought, watching Adam Lowry this season, that he is as physical as you would almost want him to be, given his size and given his frame. But maybe that's a Jets philosophy issue. That can you foresee the Jets philosophy having changed? Because all of a sudden it seems like that Pittsburgh game flipped a bit of a switch.
I don't know necessarily that the philosophy changes based on one road trip, Drew. But certainly, I mean, you mentioned, you know, he's 14th in the NHL in hits, and Adam Lowry is a big guy, 6'5", you know, 200+ pounds, and you also throw in Dustin Byfuglien, Brandon Tanev. The other guy who is top 100 in hits is Josh Morrissey. And we've seen Josh Morrissey again, and Josh Morrissey is not the biggest guy on the ice. He's not the same size as Buff, but he's a guy that quietly finishes his body checks. So again, Drew, I think the words physical and nasty have to be separated. I wouldn't say that the Jets are a nasty team. I would say a team like the Anaheim Ducks are a nasty team, with Corey Perry, Ryan Kessler. A guy like Kevin Bieksa is not afraid to give you a cross check in front of the net.
Nasty / dirty, but they play on the edge.
Okay, so
yeah.
And so I would say that they're more of a nasty team. So, but the Jets, I mean, guys, Buff's the best hitter in the NHL. I don't think anybody's going to argue with that.
I mean, it's a very subjective question, but certainly.
Come on, who's a better hitter than
Buff? I mean, maybe a more impactful hitter. I mean, when you're that big, I mean, and what he did to Mark Stone last year still resonates, I think, around the NHL.
This is a tough team to play against.
And I just don't see that, though, Ezzy. I appreciate your comments and I appreciate your opinion, but I think the Jets should have been a lot tougher over the course of the season than they truly were. I think that they tried to get away from the physicality, and maybe it affected and skill. Look, I'll take skill over physicality any day of the week. But I think the problem was those that you would want to be physical weren't as physical as they needed to be. And so they almost became more focused on the skill side of things when that's not necessarily the game. Now, you don't want Nikolaj Ehlers going around and delivering body checks, because that's not realistically what you want him to do.
No, Drew, like the Adam Lowry, Joel Armia, Sean Matthias line, that has become a shutdown line for Paul Maurice. That's the type of line that they go out there, they get in on the forecheck, and they lay a hit. And so, I mean, there are roles on a team. And, yeah, Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, he mixes it up a little bit, but he's a scorer. I mean, he's a finesse guy. So you're not going to turn, you know, the skilled guys into body checkers necessarily. But the point is, and this is coming from other coaches and other teams, I mean, the Jets are not an easy team to play against, because when you combine all the skill that they have and the size that they have, and again, I'm not saying that they're the Broad Street Bullies. I'm just saying, I'm telling you what other teams say about the Jets, and that's that they're not a fun team to play against. And that's because they have guys like Buff and Lowry, and even Blake Wheeler can throw his weight around. And Dave mentioned even some of the smaller guys like Matthew Perreault and Brandon Tanev, they throw their weight around. Josh Morrissey, I think, is developing a reputation around the NHL for being a very good defenseman that's hard to play against.
Yeah, and Josh Morrissey is, it's funny because, I mean, I saw him obviously play with the Moose, and he was always a big hitter. And it's funny because a lot of people don't recognize that from his game, because he's not the biggest guy. He's 6 feet, and he's not huge. But you, and especially now that he's slimmed down a little bit from the year before. But he's a big hitter, and someone told me like that was his kind of MO in junior as well, was that not only is he a great puck mover, but he's also a big hitter, and he does finish his checks. And as he's right, Josh Morrissey's definitely a physical defenseman. But, and again, so is Ben Chiarot. Paul Postman is obviously not the most physical guy, but the reality is that it seems to be something, I would argue that it's something that they've, maybe it's something they've displayed all year, but it's also because it's been mixed in with a lot of skill. You don't notice it as much. It's not as prevalent. But now it just seems like they played, as Ez said, really heavy games. Now, does that define them? Does that suggest that that's suddenly their identity because they had one physical road trip against Pittsburgh, a team that seemed to be spoiling for that almost as if? And that's the thing that's interesting to me, is that sometimes teams come in, expect the Jets coming in, and they're like, oh, this team plays this way. And they're basing it, because these teams don't play the Jets very often, on somewhat of this previous notion of what this Jets team was. So, you know what I mean? It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you tell yourself the Jets are this big, heavy team that's going to play a big, heavy game, and then we saw what happened in Pittsburgh. It just ended up being that sort of thing.
And I also think it's some of the events that have transpired throughout the year. So, Patrick Laine getting knocked out with a concussion, you know, Blake Wheeler getting run by Evgeny Malkin, that has maybe brought out the physicality or the nastiness in the Jets, Drew. But I think when you're talking about also the time of the year, the Jets need points. So I think, you know, that when you get closer to the end of the season, you know, you need to grind out those victories, and you need to kind of find ways to win and get a little bit more aggressive sometimes. So I think that's it partly. But at the end of the day, I wouldn't say that the Jets are an easy team to play against, and they're physical, but I'm not saying that they're necessarily a top five physical team in the NHL, but I also wouldn't say that they're a bottom five team either.
Dave Isaac of the Camden Courier Post covers the Philadelphia Flyers. There's a Stadium Series game tonight between the Flyers and the Penguins. We talk to Dave next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Medel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program our good friend Dave Isaac. Dave covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Camden Courier Post. He joins us from Pittsburgh, where the Flyers and Penguins have a Stadium Series game coming up tonight. Dave, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Dave. Yeah, we're sitting here, Dave, you know, the 25th of February, you know, 3 days before the NHL trade deadline. You know, the Flyers have 22 games remaining in this season. They need to go on a run to make the playoffs. Yet they're playing in this outdoor game, in this Stadium Series game. To me, and I wouldn't expect necessarily the Flyers to admit as such, but isn't the timing of this Stadium Series game awfully weird given where we are in the course of the NHL season?
Yeah, it is, and actually they have admitted that they would much rather have played in a Winter Classic on January 1st or have today's game be inside, because the circus that comes with all these outdoor events can draw the focus away from where it needs to be for them, and they know that. The fact that they're 5 points out of a playoff spot, there's really only one available in the Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. It's that last wild card spot. I don't think anybody's catching the Rangers there for the top wild card. So that second wild card is the only one that's available. The Flyers are 5 points out. I think everybody that's around that spot and to the bottom of the league basically is in that same little cloud of teams that are trying to scrape and claw for that spot. And the Flyers would really prefer not to have all the theatrics that go with something like this. So it's kind of a strange scene for them. I mean, they kind of secluded themselves in their own hotel. They have family here, but they put them in a separate hotel just to try and keep the focus on beating the Penguins, because the Flyers haven't won many lately.
Dave, with the trade deadline coming up next Wednesday, how do you see the Flyers' goaltending situation playing out, not just leading up to the trade deadline, but heading into next year? You have two goaltenders in Michael Neuwirth and Steve Mason who are unrestricted free agents after this year.
Yeah, you know, I think they're in a weird spot here because they're trying to fight for this playoff spot, and they're relying on a goalie. I don't even think they know which one in particular, that doesn't have a certain future with the team to try and help them get to that spot. It's just a very bizarre situation. Early in the season, I probably would have thought that Steve Mason had the upper hand in getting a contract for next year, and maybe Michael Neuwirth would be, you know, allowed to walk on July 1st. There was a certain period of time where it looked like both could go, and Michael Neuwirth has played relatively well recently to the point where they say, you know what, maybe you bring him back next year. It's very much up in the air. I wouldn't be surprised with anything at this point, really, whether one comes back. Both coming back would surprise me. But one, the other, or neither, any of those three scenarios next season would really not surprise me. But there's not a whole lot out there. So if it's not one of those two, I don't know who it is going to be. Flyers have Anthony Stolarz in the minors, played four games this season. But that's not a big enough sample size to tell you that a guy can be an NHL starter for a full season. I think he'll be here as a backup next year, but in terms of who their number one's going to be next year, I have no clue.
Dave, on Wednesday you wrote about the Flyers wanting this team, Ron Hextall, not to make any trades to stand pat so they could maintain what they've got. Do you see that happening? Do you see this team being active at the trade deadline or not active as the team would like?
You know, Hextall always talks about not looking at the team in a small sample size, but I do feel like the game tonight and Tuesday's game might have something to do with what he ends up doing. He's in a prime position to sell because he's got all these defensemen on expiring contracts and both goalies, as you just noted. There are some pieces there that could be moved. Whether anybody wants them or not remains to be seen. And he's a guy that likes to accumulate assets. And if you're looking to stockpile draft picks, I don't know that this upcoming draft is the best one to do it for. So, you know, you could see the case for, okay, may as well just let those contracts run out if it means a third-round pick, which could be a player that turns out to be nothing in a draft that's not supposed to be very deep. That's something that I could see. But he also has enough pieces. I mean, he said yesterday he's not going to be a buyer, and I don't think that was a big surprise for him to say that. But he does have pieces that he could make a big move. This team, you know, they don't have many prospects coming up next year that can play big-time roles at center for them. And that's what this team really needs. I think they could go out and get Matt Duchene if they really wanted to. They have the pieces to do that. They've got several goalie prospects. They've got several defense prospects. The question is, does anybody want the players that are on the Flyers roster right now? Because I think it's kind of a whole lot of mediocre going on there.
Dave Isaac is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Camden Courier Post. Dave, when the Flyers went on their 10-game winning streak, Claude Giroux had 12 points in those 10 games, 5 goals, 7 assists. In the past 28 games, Claude Giroux has 12 points, 3 goals and 9 assists. Flyers, not coincidentally, probably 9, 15, and 4 in those 28 games. What's the matter with Claude Giroux?
Yeah, there's definitely a case to be made that the Flyers only go as far as Claude Giroux takes them. I think their record when he scores is very good. I don't know it off the top of my head, but he just hasn't been that player this year that he has been in the past. Him and Shane Gostisbehere both had hip and abdominal surgeries last year, And I think it's the case that it's taken them a little while longer than they thought to get back to where they wanted to be. I don't think they did themselves any favors by playing in the World Cup of Hockey. Giroux only played the one game for Team Canada, but Gaston Despair played a big role for the North American team. So I think that there's still a little bit of that there where they're still trying to work back to their form, but you just can't have your number one center and your captain kind of disappear for as much time as Giroux seems to have, not just necessarily just on the score sheet, but when you watch him play. And I think the last several games, he started to trend back in the right direction. The Flyers lost to the Washington Capitals 4-1 the other night on Wednesday. But he looked like the player of old. He didn't find the score sheet, but he was doing things that I had seen him do a couple years ago that I think Flyers fans always thought that they would see out of him. Lars Eller, I don't know his stats off the top of my head in terms of, you know, height, weight, and stuff like that, but he's far bigger than Claude Giroux, and Giroux went and threw a shoulder into him, stripped the puck from him, and sent Wayne Simmonds in on a two-on-one in, like, one swift move, and that was something I hadn't seen from him in a while, so I think that Giroux's starting to trend in the right direction, but if the Flyers had any shot at all of making the playoffs, it's Giroux's going to have to turn it up, and he's going to have to turn it up now.
Dave, how surprised are you that the largest trade that we've seen in the NHL this year doesn't even involve hockey players? It involves bands. One Republic is out for the Stadium Series, and they're going to be replaced by Train. What are your thoughts on that trade?
You know, I don't know if there's like a platinum record to be named later involved in that deal or not. But yeah, maybe the weather's starting to scare people off. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know quite what the pregame entertainment's going to look like. But as long as they're not playing in a downpour of rain, I think everybody will be happy, whoever it is.
Dave, we wanted to get your take on Philadelphia Flyers fans and right now where the team is at and where they see this team going, because this is a team that, you know, hasn't been to a Stanley Cup final since 2010 against the Chicago Blackhawks, and it's a team, as you said, you know, you've got some very good players at the top, and then you've got a lot of players that you're not sure what their future is with the Philadelphia Flyers, including in goal. Is the best thing that can happen to this team is that they miss the playoffs and maybe don't do as well towards the end of the season and get a higher draft pick? Or do Flyers fans want this team to make the playoffs?
I think that there's a certain self-deprecation to Flyers fans that they would say on social media, oh, tank for the number one pick, but the odds of that are so slim. And this draft, from everybody that I've spoken to, that you know, watches these prospects ahead of the draft, this is not going to be a very deep draft. So I don't think that it's the case where they're going to be any better by missing the playoffs. I just don't think they're good enough to make the playoffs. And you know, I think what Flyers fans are starting to have an issue with is that Ron Hextall said that there was going to be a process, and they were fine with the fact that it was going to take a while, but they haven't seen any steps. And sometimes you need to take a step forward or two steps backward to take one step forward, but they haven't seen that step forward. So I think that's where some of their frustration comes from, and I can certainly understand that. But like some of these contracts and some of the players on this roster, you go, how do they take that step forward here? So I don't think it has as much to do with making the playoffs. I think it has to do with what Ron Hextall can do in the summer and what he can do in trades, because he's drafted very well. But when you look at some of the moves that he's made in terms of acquiring players, you kind of scratch your head a little bit. Their two big offseason signings were Dale Weiss and Boyd Gordon. And Boyd Gordon's in the American Hockey League right now, and Dale Weiss is on the second line, but hasn't scored in however many games it's been. He has not had the production that the Flyers thought that he would. He's been fine defensively, but offensively they thought that he might be a, you know, a depth scorer, and that just hasn't been the case. So I think the Flyers need to take a look at bringing some new assets in if they're going to take that step forward, because that's what Flyers fans haven't seen.
Dave Hextall, the Flyers coach, is now in his second season with the team. How is he being? How is he seen by fans? Do they like him? Do they see him as a long-term coach, or are they already calling for his head?
Oh, the fans now are already calling for his head for sure. I mean, some of the moves that he's made with the roster, I mean, Hextall gives him the roster and then he does with it whatever he will on game day. I think that some of his lineup decisions have certainly rubbed fans the wrong way. Shane Gostisbehere had been a healthy scratch. Travis Konecny was a healthy scratch. Fans seem to think that the only players being held accountable were under 24 years old, and that didn't sit very well with them. I also think, and I think this is a case for a lot of head coaches in the league, they don't always manage goaltenders very well. Michael Neuwirth is a guy who's been made of glass in his career, and he's been playing rather well recently, but Steve Mason's played one game since February 2nd. If the Flyers are going into a season saying that they want to have a platoon, and Steve Mason is healthy, I don't understand how that happens. So fans are certainly calling for his head, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen. Dave Hextall is absolutely part of Ron Hextall's long-term plan. This is obviously isn't the way that the Flyers saw this season going, but I think that has just as much to do with the players, if not more, than it does with the coach.
Dave, we'll let you go on this last question. We appreciate you joining us this morning. Sean Couturier got the big offseason contract, 6 years, $26 million. He's clearly having probably the worst year of his career. He's got 17 points in 44 games this season. Is that contract already looking like it's an overpay from the Flyers' perspective, or are they expecting Sean Couturier will be able to bounce back to the 40-point mark where he had been previously?
Yeah, they're expecting him to bounce back for sure. If you look at up and down this roster, nobody has scored really well recently. So I think that he's been kind of a hot-button issue with the Flyers for a number of years now. Is he a second-line center? Because he hasn't scored like one. Mm-hmm. He's a very good third-line center, very good defensive center, but hasn't had the offense that usually comes with that second-line role when you look around the NHL and see the point totals that second-line centers usually put up. So I'm sure that conversation will continue into this offseason because, like you said, of the numbers that he has right now. But he had to deal with another injury this year that obviously took something out of his game. And we'll see what happens going forward here. The Flyers haven't always given him wingers that can score to work with, but I think for the most part this season, he has had those opportunities and hasn't necessarily lived up to the bill. I don't think it's a contract that looks like it's terrible, especially on this roster, because the Flyers are kind of chock full of them. But yeah, I would agree that Sean Couturier is probably somebody that they were hoping for more from this season.
Dave Isaac covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Camden Courier-Post. He joins us from Pittsburgh, where the Flyers and the Penguins will do battle in a Stadium Series game tonight. Dave, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
When we come back, we shift our focus to the NHL trade deadline. We discuss the moves the Jets may or may not make. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Trouba at center ice and across the line. Sprints toward the net. Let a shot go stop. Rebound. They're banging away at it. They score! Drew Stafford on the rebound. Wraparound jam job. Winnipeg opens up the scoring late in this second period. It's 1-0 Jets.
Drew Stafford scoring for the Jets in that clip. Possibility he'll be scoring for another team after Wednesday's NHL trade deadline. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10 minutes before the top of the hour. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, 5 big screen TVs, full audio, great place to watch any game, Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall. The Jets, the trade deadline, let's get into it. Coming up on Wednesday, of course, complete coverage here on TSN 1290. Ezzy for the website, illegalcurve.com, you sort of reviewed some of the possible options for the Jets if they decide to be active on Wednesday Craig Custance yesterday reporting the Jets had been receiving some phone calls about Drew Stafford. He's an unrestricted free agent at season's end. A veteran certainly hasn't had the year that he would want. It's been a down year for Drew Stafford. Do you think he's the most likely player to be dealt from this Jets team ahead of Wednesday's NHL trade deadline?
Yeah, and everybody knows that, right? The names that I put up in that article are nothing new, right? Like, I mean, the possible players the Jets could move are the guys that are pending UFAs.
Mm-hmm.
So you can throw in Andre Pavlik in there. You can throw in Paul Postma in there. And Matthew Perreault has to be thrown in there because of the expansion draft implications, right? So I don't think Matthew Perreault is going to be traded, but you hear that there are teams that are after him. And if the Jets internally have decided that he's one of those players that they're going to expose, then maybe they do look at moving Matthew Perreault. And I tend to believe they won't, just because they signed him to a four-year contract extension. I think he's been playing very well for the Jets. So when you look at what the Jets are going to do, it would be hard to see the Jets being buyers because of what they have done traditionally in the past. And there has only been 1 year, and I mentioned that on the piece on illegalcurve.com, that aside from 2014-15, the Jets have never really been quote-unquote buyers, Drew, and that was the year that they acquired Jiří Tolusti and Lee Stempniak,
right,
from the Carolina Hurricanes and New York Rangers. Yeah, you had it was Klingberg going the other way to New York. So when you look at what the Jets have done traditionally, you wouldn't expect them to be a very active team. And I also think it's because right now the Jets are a team that are 6 points out of a playoff spot. They're on a bye week, and they have injuries. And I mentioned that as well. I think when you look at the injuries, and Drew Stafford wasn't included in there, but he's a guy that's missed the last three games. But with Marco Dano and Toby Enstrom and Tyler Myers out of the lineup, you know, they have guys that are injured right now. So when they get those guys back, Andrew Kopp is the other one I forgot to mention. When they get some of those guys back, those will be like trade deadline acquisitions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think the Jets are going to be very active. And, you know, who knows? Maybe the Jets will make a move that surprises us. But as far as I'm concerned, Drew Stafford is a guy to watch. And aside from that, I don't know if they make any other moves.
Dave, how do you see the Jets' trade deadline approach working out? If they do decide to get Stafford what would they be looking at in return? I mean, we know that Thomas Yurko went yesterday from the Red Wings to the Chicago Blackhawks in exchange for a third-round pick. So is that really the market? Is that sort of set the market for wingers? You know, right now, is that you're looking at, you know, third, fourth round pick for a guy who's had a down year?
Yeah, and I think the problem is you're looking at that and you're saying to yourself, if you're the Jets, comparing that to, and again, I know that the playoffs are a small chance, but you have to think, is in a weak draft year, mm-hmm. in a year that's not, no, you know, nobody's talking about this draft as if it's anything of any significance. So the fact is, you know, as Dave Isaac was talking about in the previous segment, you know, do you really want to be accumulating draft picks? I know you always want to, because it's always, you know, there's always a diamond in the rough that can be found. There's always that Henrik Zetterberg, you know, Pavel Datsyuk type player who could potentially be taken in a third, fourth, or fifth, or sixth, or Dustin Byfuglien in the seventh round.
Yeah. So Toby Enstrom in the eighth round.
Yeah, that's right. So there's always possibilities. So you don't want to be dismissive of draft picks, obviously. But I'm just saying, like, can you replace the player and their production, which I think you probably could in Drew Stafford's case, based on the fact that he hasn't been, he seems to be healthy, obviously, as I from his illness, but he seems to be healthy from a physical standpoint. So, mm-hmm.
He's just had a bad year.
No, I mean, but you can't dismiss what he had. I mean, well, you know, he had significant injuries. So,
right.
I mean, it's look, he had 21 goals for the team last year in 78 games. This year, I mean, the guy was out almost from the beginning of the season. So, I mean, you can't say, well, of course he's having a down year, but, I mean, there's a reason for it. He's had significant injuries. So I'm not holding that against him. I mean, again, his production isn't the same as it was. But if you're asking me which player I think it could be moved at the trade deadline, I really only see Drew Stafford, because as he already illustrated both now on the radio and in his piece on illegalcurve.com, Kevin Cheveldayoff hasn't shown a propensity for making big moves. And really, there really isn't a reason to be making big moves unless someone's calling you and offering you something ridiculous for a non-core piece. You know, I mean, obviously, there's names, you know, sometimes we say, are these guys untouchable? Wheeler, Shifley, Ehlers, Laine, like Byfuglien. There's so many guys who are untouchable regardless of whether they have no movement or no trade clauses or not. But, you know, so unless some team comes, like a Montreal Canadiens, that think that they could get over the hump by giving you something, then maybe, you know, something that you wouldn't have to worry about losing in the expansion. That's the other thing that has to factor in.
Yeah, well, if the Habs offer you Mikhail Sergachev, maybe you say, okay, well, you know, what would you want? But I think, you know, to Dave's point, I mean, it's not really to me about accumulating draft picks. As you know, Dave, I mean, Stafford's a guy that doesn't factor into the long-term plans, so you rather get something as opposed to losing him for nothing. Sure. So get a third-round pick, get a fourth-round pick, get a prospect, get whatever you can, because you know that with other players whose salaries are expiring pretty soon, that includes Nikolai Ehlers and Brian Little, by the way, mm-hmm. because Ehlers has got 1 year left after this year.
He'll be an RFA then, yeah.
And I've mentioned this before. I think he's a candidate to get signed to a contract extension before his third year expires, similar to Aaron Ekblad.
Sure.
And, you know, that may or may not happen.
He'd be eligible after July 1st this year to
right.
sign an extension.
And is he not a guy, Drew, that you want to sign to 8 years?
Of course he is.
Right? So, I mean, when you look at Drew Stafford making $4 million a year, does his next contract get him $4 million? No, but it probably gets him $2 or $3 million. Mm. Right. So, I mean, I think that's why he's a good candidate to get moved. And as far as Andrei Pavlik goes, maybe a team that needs a goaltender to protect in the expansion draft because they're going to move another goaltender, well, that maybe he gets moved.
Somebody like the Philadelphia Flyers, because right now the only goaltender that they would be able that they would have to expose in the expansion draft is Anthony Stolarz.
Right.
And they don't want to expose Anthony Stolarz.
Well, they need a goalie for next year, though. Right.
Right, but
and
I mean,
they don't have any goaltenders aside from Anthony Stolarz under contract.
Obviously, they need a goalie for next year, but I mean, they also need to acquire a goalie just to expose them in the expansion draft.
Right. So then Pavlik might get moved because we know that Pavlik doesn't factor into the long term plans, even though, you know, he did a good job, you know, in his short amount of time here this year. And so then maybe you see him move. Maybe a guy like Paul Postma gets moved. But again, I mentioned in the article, I don't see Paul Postma getting moved because I think he's played pretty well, and the Jets have injuries on defense.
All valid points, and I agree with both of you that I'm not expecting the Winnipeg Jets to be overwhelmingly active at the trade deadline. I'd expect, you know, one move, maybe two would even surprise me, but we will know, of course, Wednesday, 2 p.m. Central, the NHL trade deadline will have come and gone at that point in time. And, of course, NHL this week, 6 p.m. on Wednesday, recaps all the trades that happen in what I'm expecting to be a more quiet trade deadline day than a busier one.
Drew, I agree with you, and I might disagree with you if it wasn't for the fact there's the expansion draft.
Absolutely.
I really do believe that the expansion draft is really handcuffing teams. And as you mentioned before, Drew, it's going to be a lot of rentals.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a lot of guys with no term left on their contract. But absolutely, I still do think there is going to be at least one quote-unquote big trade. I'm not saying it's going to be a blockbuster, whether that's Kevin Shattenkirk, whether that's another player.
Yeah. Shattenkirk will be traded.
I do feel like there is going to be one of those or two of those moves. Again, I don't necessarily know that that's a Matt Duchene or a Gabriel Landeskog, because I think the Avalanche might wait till the offseason.
Right.
But as you said, Shattenkirk for sure. But I feel like there might be one or two others.
Shattenkirk will definitely be moved.
Yeah.
It seems, I mean, nobody would quite know what's going on.
He's
going to
be a rental,
him.
Though.
And later on in the show, when we get to the Metropolitan Division, Jim Rutherford had some really interesting comments about Marc-Andre Fleury and his status approaching the trade deadline. We'll get to that in hour number two.
And that's the other big one.
When we talk about the Metropolitan Division. For now, we go to break. Kevin Faulness is the Minnesota Wild radio host. He joins us next to talk about the Wild. They're in town on Tuesday to play the Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Kevin Faulness is the Minnesota Wild radio host. He joins us now to talk about the Wild. They're going to be in town Tuesday to play the Jets. Kevin, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, sir. We're not even looking ahead to Tuesday. We're in the middle of the bye week. It's just tropical down here. We're relaxed. We can't be thinking about hockey at this point.
We're thinking more like who's on Saturday Night Live tonight.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's crazy. This bye week thing is just complete nonsense, and it's hogwash, but I don't know. I think the Wild players are all spread out across the globe working on their tans, and they're going to be thrown right back into the fire Monday at home against the Kings, and then up to the Peg to deal with you guys.
Absolutely, Kevin. And the Jets, of course, are also in the midst of their bye week. I want to start with that. I mean, you look at the Wild right now, and they are first place in the Central Division, 84 points, you know, one of the best teams in the NHL. They have a couple games in hand on the Blackhawks still. You know, I don't think there's ever a great time for this bye week. It seems like it's the timing is always a little bit off. But from the Wild perspective, given that they are comfortably in a playoff spot, given that they're that they have a good lead on the Blackhawks right now, is this sort of maybe the best case scenario regarding the bye week, that it's coming at a decent time so that they can get set for the final 23 games of the regular season?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, I mean, the hand you're dealt, so you just got to deal with it. But I think given their druthers, they'd rather take this 5-day break and spread it out through the month of March. But I don't think that's an option. So, what it does, the fortunate thing for this team, and I think one of the big reasons why they've been so successful this year, knock on wood, they've been relatively healthy for the duration. Yeah. You know, Jonas Brodin dealt with a fractured finger and was out for 14 days or 14 games. Earlier this season, Zach Parise's had his issues coming off surgery. Jared Spurgeon earlier this season had a little minor bump and bruise. But this is a team that's been relatively healthy all season long, so it's not like they have to recuperate and get healthy. But I think if anything, for some of these big guys, I think they could use the mental break. I think Eric Staal in particular has kind of fallen off a little bit since his red-hot start here in Minnesota, and I think maybe a mental and a physical break could help him, maybe some of the other guys that log a lot of big minutes. So I don't know. I'd be more worried about the rust factor when they do hit the ice come Monday and beyond, but beyond that, I guess a mental break, it couldn't be a terrible thing.
Kevin, we've watched the Wild a lot over the years here in Winnipeg, being Central Division opponents, and the guy that's probably stood out to me the most and impressed me the most and how he's developed is the guy who's leading the Wild in scoring, Mikael Granlund. He was a first-round pick back in 2010, and he was always that player that they were waiting to break out. He's got 55 points, which would put him on pace for, I guess, around 70 points. Is it safe to say that he's a guy, based on his play this year, that is finally living up to his potential, and he's a guy that the Wild are going to want to sign long-term after this year?
Oh, there's no doubt. But I'll say this much. One thing about this team coming into this year, you knew that the mid-20 age guys were going to have to all take that next step. Granlund's one of them. Zucker's another one. Charlie Coyle, Nino Niederreiter, Eric Halla. All these guys, you flash back to a year ago at this time, you think you're worried that maybe these guys have plateaued, and Granlund's a good example. You think, boy, is he just going to be a playmaker and a guy that can't make that next step, and is this basically all that you've got? And so you kind of worry about that. Comes into this year and he's just completely blown the doors off of expectations, has definitely taken that next step in his career, and that entire line has been mutually beneficial to each other. I mean, Mikko Koivu, I think, has had a rock solid career in a Wild uniform, but this is the best he's played, from an offensive standpoint for sure, in his entire tenure here in a Wild uniform. Jason Zucker has taken that next step in his career, as has Mikael Granlund. I think all three of those guys have been feeding off each other since Thanksgiving, and it's been incredible. Granlund right at the top of the list. We know what type of a playmaker he is, but now not only is he doing that, he's got confidence with the puck, and he can do it whether he's passing it or firing it. So it's been great to watch, and it's a big reason why this Wild team is sitting where they are in the standings.
Kevin, the Wilder, their goal differential is like plus 60, which is incredible considering that no other team in the West is even really close to them in that regard. A lot of that has to do with the play of Devan Dubnyk, who's obviously, in the tops of his, in wins, shoot, save percentage, his goals against average, I think he's one or two in the league. Do you think Devan gets the respect he deserves across the NHL?
I don't know that anyone on this team gets what they deserve across the National Hockey League. Dubnyk's right there with him. Mikko Koivu, I think he's, a guy who kind of flies under the radar. I think Suter's got the appreciation level, but I guess if there's a guy in the blue line that maybe doesn't get the appreciation that he deserves, is a Jared Spurgeon. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of guys that kind of fly under the radar here in Minnesota, and, I guess who cares, but I think you could make a case for Dubnyk being a possible Vezina candidate. His numbers have taken a bit of a hit here in the last couple of weeks compared to what he was doing prior to the first of the year. But you could Selke for Mikko Koivu. I think Jack Adams for Bruce Boudreau. There's some guys having some just incredible years here for Minnesota. And again, it speaks volumes to why this team is where it's at. I'll tell you this much. The first half MVP, without a doubt, hands down, was Devan Dubnyk, but the way this team has been playing defensively, helping lock down the opposition and making things a little bit easier for Devan Dubnyk, certainly helps.
Kevin Faulness is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kevin is the Minnesota Wild radio host. The Wild into Winnipeg to play the Jets this coming Tuesday night. Kevin, the trade deadline is Wednesday, and you look at this Minnesota Wild team, and Bruce Boudreau has melded together a solid, balanced crew of scorers. You know, they're solid on the back end. We know how good Dubnyk is in goal. You know, what is Chuck Fletcher in the market for, if anything, as Wednesday's trade deadline approaches?
If I had to guess, and this is just my opinion, I really like their top nine, and even if you include Chris Stewart, I'd say their top 10 is pretty rock solid. I don't know that I'm in of the mindset to go up there and just add someone in there and potentially ruin what they've established through the first 60-some games of this National Hockey League season. So if it's me, and in my opinion, I might add like a fourth-line winger or, you know, a fourth-line depth center. That's about the extent of it. I can't imagine you throw someone in here that's going to, you know, has to have, you know, top 9 minutes, or even, you know, why you would screw around on the blue line. That's just, again, my opinion, but they've got so much depth. We knew coming into this season their defense was going to be the depth of this squad, and it has proven out to be that way. You know, even when you lose a Matt Dumba for a handful of games with a lower body injury, or you lose a Jonas Brodin with a broken finger, you know, they barely miss a beat. So to me, if you're going to add anything, add a depth, forward that can play fourth line minutes. But I don't know that I'd go out of my way to bring in a guy like Jerome McGinley or something like that, who's going to have to be in the top nine and, you know, possibly disturb the chemistry that's been established here.
Kevin, you've covered the Minnesota Wild for a long time, and obviously the biggest move they made in addition to acquiring Eric Staal in the offseason was bringing in Bruce Boudreau as their head coach, and he's got them now leading the Central Division, something that they've never done before. When you look at this team and how they play on the ice, what has Bruce Boudreau changed in this team the most that has turned them into this bona fide Stanley Cup contender?
You know, I don't know that he's physically done anything, you know, from an X's and O's standpoint, much different than what Mike Yeo did in his tenure here. You know, this team has always been a team that's had responsibilities defensively, and on nothing has changed there. They're certainly playing a great defensive style of hockey. Devan Dubnyk, you know, is playing lights out like he did when he first stepped onto the scene here with Minnesota. I think the biggest thing that has been acquired here, and I think – you know, I don't know how you plan for something like this, but the confidence level is off the charts, top to bottom. Granlund, the reason why he's having a great season is because his confidence is taking another step forward. Jason Zucker is playing like he's never played before. I don't care on what level. And I think a lot of that is because of the confidence that's been established. I think this thing has just snowballed, you know, since, you know, about Thanksgiving, and it just continues to roll downhill. And it's been, you know, Bruce Boudreau, I think the biggest thing that he brings is a calming influence inside that locker room. You know, and nothing against Mike Yeo, because I think Mike Yeo eventually is going to be a hell of a coach in the National Hockey League. But I just think right now he just brings that presence. He's been there. He's done that. He knows when to crack a joke. He knows when to crack the whip. And I think it's, you know, paid off in spades for most of these guys.
Kevin, we're known as Friendly Manitoba. You guys are known as Minnesota Nice. But it seems like whenever these two teams come together, they have a bit of a battle, especially, you know, with Buffalo and Wheeler, some Minnesota guys. Do you think that this rivalry has developed the way you had anticipated for two teams or two cities that are as close as they are in Winnipeg and Minnesota or St. Paul?
Yeah, without a doubt. There's nothing better than XL Energy Center on a, you know, a night when these two teams are battling, and you get the blue-clad fans in here as well, and it's fun. You know, you get that intensity. I think the way to get this thing up to another level is to figure out a way to meet in the playoffs. And who knows? That could be happening sooner rather than later. But that's what's going to amp it up a little bit. I think the Wild look at their chief rival right now as the Chicago Blackhawks. But right there, hot on their heels, are the Winnipeg Jets. And I think it's because of that proximity and because the fans travel so well to both the arenas. And I think you know, the only way it's going to get better is if they at some point clash in the playoffs, and I think that's coming here right around the corner.
Well, we know the Wild have been a perennial playoff team. The Jets are striving to get to that level. Hopefully, it might not be this year, but hopefully one of these years, and you're absolutely right, Kevin, that'll result in a hell of a cross-border rivalry. Kevin Faulness is the Minnesota Wild radio host. Kevin, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy the last couple days of the bye week.
Anytime. Have fun. See you.
Take care, Kevin. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we return, we look at the Central Division at the upcoming NHL trade deadline. We start to go team by team, division by division. It's the Illegal Curve trade deadline preview coming up next on TSN 1290.
Passes down the right wing for Steen. He gives it to Tarasenko. Now to Alexander Steen straight away. Back to Tarasenko. He's in to the goal line. Far side. They score! Shattenkirk from Stastny and Tarasenko. And the Blues get the power play goal. They tie the game at one.
Wow.
6:42 to go in the first period.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We start to go team by team, division by division as part of our NHL trade deadline preview. This first segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. As I mentioned, we start with the Central Division. We talked about the Jets earlier in the program. We need to mention the Chicago Blackhawks have already dipped into the trade market by acquiring Thomas Yurko from the Detroit Red Wings. Going back to Detroit was a 2017 third-round pick.
Hey, Drew, the Yurko store called.
They're all out of me? Well done. So let's start with that. We'll start with the Chicago Blackhawks. Even though they're currently second in the Central Division, they acquired Yurko. Your thoughts on that acquisition for the Blackhawks? Is this the... I mean, the Blackhawks are obviously not going to be in a position where they can make a big splash. Is this sort of depth winger acquisition a good move for the Blackhawks?
Yeah, well, look what the Blackhawks did with Richard Panik. They acquired Richard Panik off the scrap heap, and he's played on the top line with Nick Schmaltz and Jonathan Toews. So a guy like Thomas Yurko, I mean, let's be honest here, guys. The Red Wings expected more out of him at the NHL level. He was a healthy scratch with them. I think he got into 15 or 16 games and he had no points. He was a guy that they had high hopes for because he was putting up some decent numbers, Dave, with the Grand Rapids Griffins. But when he was up with the Detroit Red Wings, either on a second or third line role, he just wasn't producing, right? So he's a very skilled player, Drew. And he's not the biggest player, but he's a guy that you expect to chip in on whichever line he's on, right? So I think they'll give him a chance, and it looks like, you know, they're going to start him off on the fourth line there with Ryan Hartman and Tanner Kiro. But, I mean, it's a move that I would expect out of a team like Chicago. I realize that, you know, you expect maybe more moves for a team that knows that they have the horses to win the Stanley Cup. But, you know, he's a good depth acquisition, similar to Richard Panik. And I thought it was a decent move.
You put him with a bunch of skill players like the Blackhawks have. You might be able to catch lightning in a bottle with a guy like that. Terrible year in Detroit. Still looking for his first point, despite playing 16 games with the Red Wings this season. So definitely not the year that Thomas Yurko wanted. And as you said, Ezzy, he's a guy who did have a lot of hype around him, but hasn't really ever been able to translate that into the NHL level.
I think that's what Chicago has to do, though. I mean, I think at this point, I think we've seen that the big splashy moves don't work. You know, they traded for Andrew Ladd. That didn't necessarily pay off for them, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you pay a high price when you give up, like, the top, you know, even though, you know, the first round pick isn't going to be a high pick, it's a high price to pay to potentially not, and you know, you're changing the chemistry of the team that's led you to success. So if you offset it by adding smaller pieces like they've just done, a trade with Detroit, which to me seems shocking when Chicago and Detroit get together to do anything other than kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of move I think you're going to see from Chicago.
Yeah, and you know, other guys that have been rumored to be going to Chicago, like maybe they go after a Drew Stafford or a Radim Verbana, but those are rentals. So you know, it's possible that Stan Bowman, you know, decides
to
get one of those players. But Patrick, I think your point is well taken, Dave. Exactly. Patrick Sharp is another one of those veteran forwards from the Dallas Stars that has been rumored to be of interest by the Chicago Blackhawks. But I don't think they're going to give up a first-round pick like they did with Andrew Ladd. So if you're talking about one of these players, I don't think you're giving up anything more than maybe a second or third round.
And if Yurko comes into the Blackhawks lineup and they like what they see, he's an RFA at season's end. So
Chicago's won 7 of their last 8 games, though,
well,
true.
The Chicago Blackhawks are beginning to look like the Chicago Blackhawks.
Right.
Not that they've been struggling by any means, but now that it's, you know, the last 20 games of the season here, 25 games for some teams, whatever it might be, they are going to start to get ready for the playoffs. They spend the first 60 games just establishing themselves as a definite playoff team, and then they spend the last 20 games of the regular season establishing themselves as the Stanley Cup favorite.
Maybe they look at that defense and they say, on our third pair, maybe we part with one of our young prospects to get a veteran defenseman, because as we know, Nicholas Hjalmarsson left the last game with an upper body injury. It doesn't look like it's going to be serious, but Keith, Seabrook, Hjalmarsson, Campbell, those are your top four. And then after that, you're hoping guys like Trevor Van Riemsdyk and Gustav Forsling get it done. So, I mean, this is a team that wants to go all the way, right?
They've always won
three cups in the last 7 years. So maybe that's another move they make, a depth defenseman. But that's a definite buyer.
The definite buyer would be the Blackhawks. And they already bought, as I said, Thomas Yurko being acquired for a third-round pick. The St. Louis Blues are a team that had two players that were being talked about as trade bait. They dealt with one of them yesterday in signing Patrick Berglund to a lengthy contract extension, a 5-year contract extension for Patrick Berglund, getting, I believe, three and change per year. Let me see if I can pull up the exact figures while we're here. But your thoughts on the Blues keeping Berglund around for the next five seasons?
Well, he's a guy that, you know, he's...
5 years, pardon me. 5 years, $19.25 million, yep. $3.85 million per season, includes a partial no-trade clause.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys that spent his entire career with the St. Louis Blues. And, you know, he's a big center, and, you know, he's got limited offensive ability, but he's a solid two-way guy. Mm-hmm. So I have no problem with that signing. I mean, let's talk about the one that everybody wants to talk about. Kevin Shattenkirk, right? And you heard earlier this week that there was a trade in place with an Eastern Conference team believed to be the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Shattenkirk, his camp, denied that trade, even though he doesn't have a no-move clause. In this situation, it looks like he's going to be a rental player.
It was a sign in trade. So what Tampa Bay and St. Louis are trying to work...
Well, we think it's Tampa Bay.
Right, okay. What it's been suggested that it's Tampa Bay and St. Louis were trying to work was a sign in trade,
right,
where Shattenkirk would sign a long-term deal with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and in exchange, the Blues would get more for Shattenkirk than they would if it was a pure rental.
Right.
Shattenkirk and the Lightning, supposedly the Lightning, couldn't come to agreement on the terms. Supposedly there was a 7-year, $42 million contract.
Apparently Tyler Johnson was involved.
Yeah, it was a big trade,
right,
that couldn't come to fruition. So Shattenkirk, and I don't blame Shattenkirk. You're, you know, 2 months away from unrestricted free agency. Why would you sign away your... Why wouldn't you go to unrestricted free agency? What's right. the incentive for signing that contract with Tampa?
And I guess the incentive would be that you really want to sign with that team.
Unless you know that you want to be in right. Tampa. Unless that's right. the one team you definitely want to be with.
The problem is that he's not. The rumor with him is that he wants to go to the Rangers.
Of course. The Rangers, somewhere
or
on
Boston.
The...
The two teams I've heard are the Rangers and Boston.
That's
so.
Absolutely. Somewhere on the East Coast. Now, I know Tampa's on the East Coast, but, you know, let's say the Northeast Coast.
Yeah, right. Well, exactly.
So let's talk about Shattenkirk as a pure rental.
Yeah, well, that exactly. You mentioned pure rental, Drew, and that's what changes the situation, because now St. Louis can't get as much back. If you're going to be signing a guy long-term, you're going to give up more because you really want him, right?
Hence why Tyler Johnson was supposedly involved.
Right. So when you're talking about either the Rangers or the Bruins, the Leafs are in there. I think another team to throw in there is Pittsburgh.
Sure.
And I'm wondering if there can something can be worked out with Pittsburgh, with Marc-Andre Fleury possibly being dealt and Kevin Shattenkirk, because we know that St. Louis needs a goalie.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can work something out there, because the Pens have had some injuries on the back end with Trevor Daley, Ollie Matta, Chris Letang has had some injury problems as well. Not that he's going to be out long term, but you wonder if maybe the Penguins are going to be in on Kevin Shattenkirk, because he's a rental, right? And the Penguins are buyers as well. So Shattenkirk is the big one. He's the big fish in the trade pond. And, you know, you also have to look at a guy like Robbie Fabry, who's out of the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So the Blues will probably want a forward coming back.
The big problem for Pittsburgh, of course, is the salary cap situation. But the way they can work around that is if they put a guy like Olli Maatta or Trevor Daley on LTIR.
Yep.
Because remember, once the trade deadline, there's no salary cap in the playoffs. So Olli Maatta can go on LTIR. You can acquire a player in their, you know, to using that cap space,
right.
And then once the playoffs hit, you can activate Olli Maatta off the LTIR, and there is no salary cap ramifications.
How good would Kevin Shattenkirk look in a Pens uniform? Not to say that he wouldn't look good in a Rangers uniform, but maybe there's something to be worked out there, because I do believe that St. Louis, even though, you know, Jake Allen has been playing a little bit better as of late, I don't know if they're confident going into the playoffs with him.
a fair point, but I think it's pretty clear that, I mean, for Shattenkirk, you're looking at, like you saw with Andrew Ladd going from the Jets to the Blackhawks last year, looking at a first-round pick, which is probably a late first-rounder, and a prospect. I mean, that's generally what a pure rental like that is going to cost the team. Is that safe to say?
Yeah.
And the problem is that the reason why he hasn't been moved is because the price is supposedly higher than that.
Well,
so,
it's higher than that today. It doesn't.
Right, of course. Yeah. No, of course. And then as you get closer, if you're St. Louis and you see where you are, you know, does it at that point become a little more precarious to be holding all your cards that tight?
Dave, St. Louis to me is a very interesting team because they fire Ken Hitchcock, and it surprised a lot of people. Replace him with Mike Yeo, and you look at the record under Mike Yeo, it's been very good, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think this team, Doug Armstrong, when you're the St. Louis Blues and you make the playoffs every year, I think they always believe they have a shot.
Yeah.
So maybe they make a bigger move and they throw in another player to acquire a goaltender, or maybe they try to go after that
so
forward.
You could see the Blues being both a seller of Shattenkirk and maybe even buy somebody as well to sort of help the depth of the
organization. Oh, yeah, the Blues are a seller and a buyer.
Yeah, so a very interesting case for the Blues there being a seller, and you don't see that every year necessarily.
Look at you know, teams that kind of you don't expect to necessarily go very far in the playoffs. San Jose and Pittsburgh were both not expected to go that far last year. So St. Louis is probably going to finish, you know, 5th, 6th, 7th in the Western Conference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all you need is a hot goaltender and a chance, right? And they haven't had the hot goaltender, but they're going to have the chance. And, I mean, this is still a team with a lot of good players.
Sure. Minnesota Wild, we talked about them with Kevin Faulness last segment. I wouldn't expect the Wild to do anything overwhelmingly big, maybe a depth player, you know. Like Kevin said, I think that they are happy with sort of what they have in their roster right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect the Wild to do much. And, you know, there were some rumors that they might go after, you know, a guy like Jerome McGinley or you know, a Patrick Sharp, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it happening. I mean, Eric Staal was the big acquisition that they made, you know, to give them more size and veteran experience up the middle, Drew.
Yeah.
And that defense is really good, and we know they have no problem in goal, so I don't see them making any big moves, but, you know, we'll wait and see what happens Wednesday.
And then the Nashville Predators are a team in the Central Division that they're currently a playoff team. Do you see the Predators being especially active right now? You know, it's sort of been a weird year in Nashville.
Well, do they deal Mike Ribeiro? He's playing in the AHL right now.
Yeah, but if there was somebody who really wanted Mike Ribeiro, they probably would have gone and you know, got him at this point.
They're playing pretty well. You know, they're set in goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've made quite a few moves on the back end over the years, so maybe they pick up a depth player, but I don't see them swinging a big deal.
No, I don't see them. They're sort of been they're a tweener this year. They're not really a Stanley Cup contender, but they're a playoff team, so they're not going to sell a guy like Mike Fisher at this point in his career, who's an unrestricted free agent. They need him still on their roster going forward. The Jets, we of course spoke about, that leaves the Dallas Stars, and yep, they got into the business yesterday by trading Patrick Eves to the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, I really like that move for the Ducks because the Ducks are a veteran team, even though they've got some young players, you know, at forward and on defense, and John Gibson's not very old either, but they're a veteran team in the sense of where they are in the team's development.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, you throw in guys like Perry and Getzlaff and Ryan Kessler, but, you know, Patrick Eves is a guy that, you know, we've seen what he's done on the Dallas Stars top line. He's got 20-plus goals, so I love that move. You know, it gives them a beard to compete with Brent Burns and Joe Thornton's beards in California. So, like that move, and, you know, that's kind of the market, right? And that can turn into a first-round pick
yes,
if the Ducks go far in the playoffs.
It was Patrick Eves being sent to Anaheim in exchange for a 2017 second-round pick. But if the Ducks advance to the Western Conference Finals and Eves plays more than 50% of the games in the first two rounds,
yeah, that's right,
that turns into the Ducks' first-round pick. What they actually traded was the Leafs' second-round pick that they acquired for Frederick Anderson in the offseason.
I mean, again, Dallas is a team, an interesting team in the sense that nobody thought that they would be sellers. I mean, how many people at the beginning of this year predicted Dallas Stars would be sellers? But having said that, it's unfortunate for them that it is in a deeper draft because this would be, they've got the players to, you know, sell.
I wonder how. I wonder if they're going to be interested in acquiring 2018 picks as opposed to 2017 picks,
right,
because of the weakness, supposedly, of this year's draft. We'll come back to wrap up the Central Division a little bit later on, but Marty Biron, TSN hockey analyst, joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.